Welcome to Principled. In celebration of our 25th year, we are bringing you this podcast series. Welcome to Principled. Joining us today, we have Denny Anderson. Denny is the Director of Global Compliance Operations at Endeavor. Denny and I have known each other, I think, for close to 15 years now. Denny, is that right?
Oh, that is correct. It's been a long time, Marcia.
Can you share a little bit about how did you even decide to really pursue a career in the compliance and ethics field?
I have experienced so many challenging moments in my lifetime. And among them, the most difficult moments were when I was not able to help someone who didn't otherwise have a voice.
Mm.
I witnessed so many injustices, like bullying, Me Too movements, harassment in many forms. And usually these employees were not in a position to speak up. And if they did or tried to, their credibility was attacked so that their claims would be dismissed. I saw leaders abuse their power or band together to ensure their wrongdoing was not brought out into the open. Even when others were in a position to do something, they simply became bystanders. This was new to me. People who abused the power entrusted to them for their own personal gain and at the cost of their employer. And there was no one at the top policing this behavior or this conduct. So I have began diversity management and training then and found that for the most part, companies wanted to do this as a check-the-box exercise. But nothing was really being done about stopping the behavior that in some instances were so damaging to the reputation of a company. Policies existed, but there were no consequences for violating them. Sales leaders would turn a blind eye or a deaf ear if people committing these acts were their top salespeople. This is just one example out of many. But in many cases, you know, the victims would take the high road and just leave. But what if the company was not so lucky to escape a class action lawsuit that cost the company $50 million versus the million in revenue generated by that salesperson? I mean, I stumbled upon compliance by accident at that point, taking on what was supposed to be a short-term assignment. That's when you and I met, Marcia, to help operationalize an office, and found that I could not only help implement policies, train on those policies, but enforce them and help shape behavior to ensure employees do the right thing. So I think, as it turned out, it was not an accident after all how I got into compliance.
What have you seen as you've shifted from being on the inside as a solution provider and, you know, developing training strategies to bringing that in-house to organizations?
One of the big changes, it looks a little differently when we are sitting as a solution provider. We're sort of on the, you know, outside looking in. But when you have the opportunity to actually come in-house and really understand the struggle that, you know, leaders are facing in basically managing a compliance program, understanding all of the intricacies, especially when you're managing a complex business, you know, where, you know, many policies, you know, don't apply to a lot of the businesses, it takes a different form because now it's real. You know, you're not just advising someone who may just need advice on, you know, how do I establish a policy or how do I enforce the policy and what else do I need to do to drive change in this area. But you are forced to roll up your sleeves and just dive in. And it becomes crucial, you know, for leaders. And this is what I've seen in my in-house roles, to really partner up with the businesses and understand what the challenges are, where these challenges are coming from, what's causing them, and really find a way that's going to work, but, you know, without impeding the flow of the daily work. And I think, you know, that is, you know, it's a piece that I never saw when I was a solution provider. And now that I'm on this end, I completely understand. And it makes me feel almost as if I wasn't sensitive enough when I was a solution provider, because I did not really witness or experience the true challenges that leaders are facing today.
Organizations and had the opportunity to see what are some of the kind of top traits of leaders today. As you look forward in terms of where industries are headed on a global scale, what do you think are some of those skills or traits that leaders really need to carry forward?
There's definitely no single recipe for, you know, leadership and what leaders need today. There might be a few differences, but leaders really and as I mentioned before, are not defined by their title or the position they hold, but based on the positive impact that they have on their team and the business. Leaders influence their people, inspire them to go above and beyond, and keep them focused on achieving their goals. Leaders do not rule by fear or intimidation if they want to get the job done. And, you know, leaders celebrate successes and promote good behavior while clearly defining expectations. I also think that great leaders laid the groundwork for their employees to be successful and are not threatened by their knowledge. Rather, they seek and welcome a higher level of expertise from each of their team members. I mean, similarly to an athletic coach who stands on the sidelines expertly guiding his team to victory, the coach is not going to run the field for his team, but he will make sure that the defense is prepared to protect the end zone and that the offensive line can score. So I think leaders, by definition, are enablers. They're not the people that are going to stand in your way and prevent you from doing your job, but they're going to enable you and propel you to do it and do a good job and give you the tools that you need to carry it out. So I think that was true then. It is true in, you know, the many companies that I have been associated with and my employers. And so I think that is what leadership means.
For our listeners who are hesitant or have never embarked on really involving their middle management team or frontline leaders and being a part of driving compliance and ethics, what would be your advice to them around, you know, just really getting their leadership involved in being a part of driving the dialogue?
I have seen this happen many times, and I think, you know, leaders themselves need to be involved. They sort of need to walk the walk, right? It's not simply, let me say that I embrace this or that we're going to be doing this as a company and that we want our employees to do this. But if you yourself as a leader are not leading by example, that in itself is going to be ineffective. So I think it starts at the top. But while the messaging from the top is the most important, middle management is where the message usually gets lost. And so I think that there is a lot of training, a lot more time that we need to spend with middle management to get it so that that message can disseminate to, you know, the lower levels of the organization if you're really going to drive change, if you're really going to inspire, you know, true leadership, not only because of a title, but because you want all of your employees to be leaders. You want to empower them to do the right thing so that the company can be more successful. So I think if the message is not done right at the top, is going to get lost somewhere in the middle. And so I think this is where we need to spend a lot of time. And I think a lot of companies are doing that successfully now, which is very evident in, you know, how successful they are in the market because they are doing the right thing, not only by their middle management, but their employees as a whole.
Shifting gears, you and I have been in the compliance and ethics field now for nearly two decades or so. But I would say when I entered the field, I wasn't seeing a lot of women in top leadership roles, charting the course of compliance and compliance programs. And then if we take a step back, you know, there's a lot of headlines and discussion today around diversifying both the C-suite, the executive teams of organizations, and the board, all the way to the board. As a matter of fact, there's some discussions around state legislation around mandating a certain percentage of the board become more diversified and representative of women in leadership. So I'm curious, you know, kind of in your journey here, what do you think have been some of the most significant barriers to women rising in leadership?
Yeah, this is probably one of my favorite topics because you would think it's more about academics, right? But in my opinion, I feel that one of the most, if not the most significant barrier, is the good old institutional mindset. You know, the assumptions about women at work based on our stereotypical roles in society. As in most cultures, we're taught since we're young that the man is the breadwinner and that the woman is the homemaker and that men make the important decisions while the woman is left with the mundane tasks. This transcends corporate culture, obviously. The belief that men are more effective leaders, that men make better decisions, and that because women are traditionally the caretakers, sort of the support function, if you will, that we cannot give priority to our careers or be fully committed to our role if we're elected leaders. I mean, sadly, these are hidden biases that have always existed, have never gone away, are still present today. And it's the main reason why there are less women in leadership roles. These hidden biases limit growth opportunity for women, even when case studies have shown that women earn the majority of university degrees. So obviously, it is not about the academics. It is not about the degree. It's about how we are perceived in the workplace. Still, even though we have made a lot of progress, but we're still perceived as sort of the support function. So as women, we need to start challenging the status quo. You know, it is up to us to start changing that institutional mindset. And it starts with us, really.
It's so true. And as we coach our daughters and the next generation of women, what are some of the strategies they should be considering to incorporate in achieving and going for it?
Oh, my goodness, Marsha, that question hits home right now for me as I am, you know, counseling my own daughter as she enters the market, you know, recent college grad. I talked to her about this very same thing and how difficult it was for me then, how difficult it was for many of my peers, and, you know, how a little better it is for her, but there's so much work to do. And I think while companies and leaders work to address the gender inequality, you know, at all levels of the organization, it is not their responsibility alone. I mean, screaming at the top of our lungs, demanding gender equality is not going to get it done either. We cannot raise problems without offering solutions. If what is being done has not been effective, then by all means, let's roll up our sleeves and dive into the effort. I mean, simply requesting that we be treated as equals is not effective. We need to eliminate these barriers through education, work-life balance programs at all levels. We need to raise awareness about sex discrimination and make it a requirement. We need to study our organizations and identify the negative stereotypes about women, what types of stereotypes exist, and then form a plan to eliminate them. You know, we also need to highlight the contributions that women make toward the success of the organization. I don't think we do enough of that. But most importantly, we need to create more mentorship and sponsorship for women leaders. Create women leadership tracks inside the organization to develop and promote our diamonds in the rough, our hidden gems. And if we have to go out to market to recruit them, then by all means, let's make sure that we recruit diverse, talented women into non-traditional roles. You know, the recruiting process needs to be managed and overseen also to ensure that it is a fair process. So I think, you know, there's a lot of things here that we need to be doing simultaneously if we're going to be successful in really developing the next leaders, the next women leaders.
As you look in the next 5 years and kind of forecast where are we headed as an industry, what do you think will be some of the biggest disruptors as the compliance and ethics field evolves?
Compliance and ethics, you know, we have made great progress, right? We have come a long way from our early stages, and I think folks are beginning to get it. You know, they're beginning to understand, but I still see and experience a lot of hesitation and a lot of confusion around what compliance does and what the role of compliance truly is within an organization. Sometimes it appears as though it's a hot potato, right? No, it's an HR issue. No, it's a compliance issue. No, it's actually a senior leader's issue. The truth is that as compliance and ethics professionals, we need to form those alliances with all of the businesses at every level, because it is the only way that we are going to be successful in driving that message forward. It is the only way that we're going to sort of be moving into the fabric of the organization to really help drive change. It sounds easy, but that's easier said than done. We have a lot of work to do, especially when you are working with an organization that, for the most part, they don't really know what compliance is. And if we're viewed as sort of the police, you know, we need to change that mindset that we are here to empower them to do business and to make sure that we protect them in doing business, not to take away how they do business. And I think that is probably the biggest challenge for us as compliance professionals, but in the industry in general, I think we need to do more of these awareness sessions where we're talking through some of the challenges, because even if you are working in the same space, the issues are going to be completely different. And so we learn from those challenges and the differences that we are seeing in all kinds of companies today. So I think driving the message forward, continuing to partner up with other leaders, with other, you know, industry experts, with other compliance and ethics professionals like ourselves, it's really going to help to drive that message and make us a more powerful function within organizations in the future.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled that we've had the opportunity for you to share with our listeners your journey, your reflections. You know, I've personally always admired your conviction to principles and tell it like it is, Denny. So thank you again.
Thank you so much, Marsha. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing so much with our listeners. So appreciate you joining us here on Principled and look forward to chatting again. Thank you.
Will do. Thank you, Marsha.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled Podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning, ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.